school and flown a helicopter into a monster battle just to see me. In her own way, she was as brave as Annabeth. But what was happening to her with these visions really freaked me out. Maybe it was something that happened to all mortals who could see through the mist. But my mom had never talked about anything like that, and Hestia's words about Luke's mom kept coming back to me. May Castellan went too far. She tried to see too much. "Rachel," I said, "I wish I knew. Maybe we should ask Chiron." She flinched, like she'd gotten an electric shock. "Percy, something is about to happen. A trick that ends in death." "What do you mean? Whose death?" "I don't know." She looked around nervously. "Don't you feel it?" "Is that the message you wanted to tell me?" "No," she hesitated. "I'm sorry, I'm not making sense. But that thought just came to me. The message I wrote on the beach was different. It had your name in it." "Perseus," I remembered, "in ancient Greek." Rachel nodded. "I don't know its meaning, but I know it's important. You have to hear it. It said, 'Perseus, you are not the hero.'" I stared at her like she just slapped me. "You came thousands of miles to tell me I'm not the hero?" "It's important," she insisted. "It will affect what you do." "Not the hero of the prophecy?" I asked. "Not the hero who defeats Kronos? What do you mean?"
I'm sorry, Percy. That's all I know. I had to tell you because..."
"Well," Chiron cantered over, "this must be Ms. Dare."
I wanted to yell at him to go away, but of course I couldn't. I tried to get my emotions under control. I felt like I had another personal hurricane swirling around me. "Chiron, Rachel Dare," I said. "Rachel, this is my teacher, Chiron."
"Hello,"
Rachel said glumly. She didn't look at all surprised that Chiron was a centaur.
"You are not asleep, Miss Dare," he noticed, "and yet you are mortal."
"I'm mortal," she agreed, like it was a depressing thought. "The pilot fell asleep as soon as we passed the river. I don't know why I didn't. I just knew I had to be here. To warn Percy."
"Warn Percy?"
"She's been seeing things," I said, "writing lines and making drawings." Chiron raised an eyebrow.
"Indeed. Tell me."
She told him the same things she'd told me. Chiron stroked his beard. "Miss Dare, perhaps we should talk." "Chiron?" I blurted. I had a sudden terrible image of Camp Half-Blood in the 1990s and May Castellan scream from that attic.
You'll help Rachel, right? I mean, you'll warn her that she's got to be careful with this stuff, not go too far."
His tail flicked like it does when he's anxious.
"Yes, Percy, I will do my best to understand what is happening and advise Miss Dare, but this may take some time. Meanwhile, you should rest. We've moved your parents' car to safety. The enemy seems to be staying put for now. We've set up bunks in the Empire State Building. Get some sleep."
"Everybody keeps telling me to sleep," I grumbled. "I don't need sleep." Chiron managed to smile.
"Have you looked at yourself recently, Percy?"
I glanced down at my clothes, which were scorched, burned, sliced, and tattered from my night of constant battles.
"I look like death," I admitted.
"But you think I can sleep after what just happened?"
"You may be invulnerable in combat," Chiron chided, "but that only makes your body tire faster. I remember Achilles. Whenever that lad wasn't fighting, he was sleeping. He must have taken 20 naps a day. You, Percy, need your rest. You may be our only hope."
I wanted to complain that I wasn't their only hope. According to Rachel, I wasn't even the hero. But the look in Chiron's eyes made it clear he wasn't going to take no for an answer.
"Sure," I grumbled. "Talk."
I trudged toward the Empire State Building. When I glanced back, Rachel and Chiron were walking together in earnest conversation, like they were discussing funeral arrangements.
Inside the lobby, I found an empty bunk and collapsed. Sure that I would never be able to sleep. A second later, my eyes closed. In my dreams, I was back in Hades' garden. The Lord of the Dead paced up and down, holding his ears while Nico followed him, waving his arms.
"You have to," Nico insisted.
Demeter and Persephone sat behind them at the breakfast table. Both of the goddesses looked bored. Demeter poured shredded wheat into four huge bowls. Persephone was magically changing the flower arrangement on the table, turning the blossoms from red to yellow to polka-dotted.
"I don't have to do anything."
Hades' eyes blazed.
"I'm a god."
"Father," Nico said, "if Olympus falls, your own palace's safety doesn't matter. You'll fade too."
"I am not an Olympian," he growled. "My family has made that quite clear."
"You are," Nico said, "whether you like it or not."
"You saw what they did to your mother," Hades said. "Zeus killed her, and you would have me help them? They deserve what they get."
Persephone sighed. She walked her fingers across the table, absently turning the silverware into roses.
"Could we please not talk about that woman? You know what would help this boy?"
Demeter mused.
"Farming."
Persephone rolled her eyes.
"Mother?"
"6 months behind the plow. Excellent character building."
Nico stepped in front of his father, forcing Hades to face him. "My mother understood about family. That's why she didn't want to leave us. You can't just abandon your family because they did something horrible. You've done horrible things to them too."
"Maria died,"
Hades reminded him.
"You can't just cut yourself off from the other gods."
"I've done very well at it for thousands of years."
"And has that made you feel any better?" Nico demanded. "Has that curse on the oracle helped you at all? Holding grudges is a fatal flaw. Bianca warned me about that, and she was right."
"For demigods, I am immortal, all-powerful. I would not help the other gods if they begged me, if Percy Jackson himself pleaded."
"You're as much of an outcast as I am," Nico yelled. "Stop being angry about it and do something helpful for once. That's the only way they'll respect you."
Hades' palm filled with black fire.
"Go ahead," Nico said. "Blast me. That's just what the other gods would expect from you. Prove them right."
"Yes, please," Demeter complained.
"Shut him up."
Persephone sighed.
"Oh, I don't know. I would rather fight in the war than eat another bowl of cereal. This is boring."
Hades roared in anger. His fireball hit a silver tree right next to Nico, melting it into a pool of liquid metal. And my dream changed. I was standing outside the United Nations, about a mile northeast of the Empire State Building. The Titan Army had set up camp all around the UN complex. The flagpoles were hung with horrible trophies, helmets and armor pieces from defeated campers. All along First Avenue, giants sharpened their axes. Telkines repaired armor at makeshift forges. Kronos himself paced at the top of the plaza, swinging his scythe so his Dracene bodyguards stayed way back. Ethan Nakamura and Prometheus stood nearby, out of slicing range. Ethan was fidgeting with his shield straps, but Prometheus looked as calm and collected as ever in his tuxedo.
"I hate this place," Kronos growled. "United Nations, as if mankind could ever unite. Remind me to tear down this building after we destroy Olympus."
"Yes, Lord,"
Prometheus smiled, as if his master's anger amused him.
"Shall we tear down the stables in Central Park too? I know how much horses can annoy you."
"Don't mock me, Prometheus.
Those cursed centaurs will be sorry they interfered. I will feed them to the hellhounds, starting with that son of mine, that weakling Chiron.
Prometheus shrugged. That weakling destroyed an entire legion of Telkines with his arrows. Kronos swung his scythe and cut a flagpole in half. The national colors of Brazil toppled into the army, squashing a Dracaena.
We will destroy them, Kronos roared. It is time to unleash the dragon. Nakamura, you will do this.
Yes, Lord. At sunset?
No,
Kronos said.
Immediately. The defenders of Olympus are badly wounded. They will not expect a quick attack. Besides, we know this dragon they cannot beat.
Ethan looked confused.
My lord?
Never you mind, Nakamura. Just do my bidding. I want Olympus in ruins by the time Typhon reaches New York. We will break the gods utterly.
But my lord, Ethan said, your regeneration.
Kronos pointed at Ethan, and the demigod froze.
Does it seem, Kronos hissed, that I need to regenerate?
Ethan didn't respond. Kind of hard to do when you're immobilized in time. Kronos snapped his fingers and Ethan collapsed.
Soon, the Titan growled. This form will be unnecessary. I will not rest with victory so close. Now go.
Ethan scrambled away.
This is dangerous, my lord, Prometheus warned. Do not be hasty.
Hasty? After festering for 3,000 years in the depths of Tartarus, you call me hasty? I will slice Percy Jackson into 1,000 pieces.
Thrice you fought him, Prometheus pointed out, and yet you've always said it is beneath the dignity of a Titan to fight a mere mortal. I wonder if your mortal host is influencing you, weakening your judgment.
Kronos turned his golden eyes on the other Titan.
You call me weak? No, my lord, I only meant... Are your loyalties divided?
Kronos asked.
Perhaps you miss your old friends, the gods. Would you like to join them?
Prometheus paled.
I misspoke, my lord. Your orders will be carried out.
He turned to the armies and shouted,
Prepare for battle!
The troops began to stir. From somewhere behind the UN compound, an angry roar shook the city. The sound of a dragon waking. The noise was so horrible it woke me, and I realized I could still hear it from a mile away. Grover stood next to me, looking nervous.
What was that?
They're coming, I told him, and we're in trouble. The Hephaestus cabin was out of Greek fire. The Apollo cabin and the hunters were scrounging for arrows. Most of us had already ingested so much ambrosia and nectar, we didn't dare take any more. We had 16 campers, 15 hunters, and half a dozen satyrs left in fighting shape. The rest had taken refuge on Olympus. The party ponies tried to form ranks, but they staggered and giggled, and they all smelled like root beer. The Texans were headbutting the Coloradoans. The Missouri branch was arguing with Illinois. The chances were pretty good the whole army would end up fighting each other rather than the enemy. Chiron trotted up with Rachel on his back. I felt a twinge of annoyance because Chiron rarely gave anyone a ride, and never a mortal.
Your friend here has some useful insights, Percy, he said.
Rachel blushed. Just some things I saw in my head.
A dragon, Chiron said. A Lydian dragon, to be exact. The oldest and most dangerous kind.
I stared at her. How did you know that? I'm not sure, Rachel admitted. But this dragon
has a particular fate. It will be killed by a child of Ares. Annabeth crossed her arms. How can you possibly know that? I just saw it. I can't explain.
Well, let's hope you're wrong, I said, because we're a little short on children of Ares.
A horrible thought occurred to me, and I cursed in ancient Greek.
What?
Annabeth asked.
The spy, I told her. Kronos said, we know they cannot beat this dragon.
The spy has been keeping them updated. Kronos knows the Ares cabin isn't with us. He intentionally picked a monster we can't kill.
Thalia scowled. If I ever catch your spy, he's going to be very sorry. Maybe we could send another messenger to camp.
I've already done it, Chiron said. Blackjack is on his way, but if Selena wasn't able to convince Clarice, I doubt Blackjack will be able.
A roar shook the ground. It sounded very close.
Rachel, I said, get inside the building.
I want to stay.
A shadow blotted out the sun. Across the street, the dragon slithered down the side of a skyscraper. It roared, and 1,000 windows shattered.
On second thought, Rachel said in a small voice, I'll be inside.
Let me explain. There are dragons, and then there are drakens. Drakens are several millennia older than dragons, and much larger. They look like giant serpents. Most don't have wings. Most don't breathe fire, though some do. All are poisonous. All are immensely strong, with scales harder than titanium. Their eyes can paralyze you. Not the turn-you-to-stone, Medusa-type paralysis, but the, oh my gods, that big snake is going to eat me type of paralysis, which is just as bad. We have dragon fighting classes at camp, but there is no way to prepare yourself for a 200-foot-long serpent as thick as a school bus slithering down the side of a building, its yellow eyes like searchlights and its mouth full of razor-sharp teeth big enough to chew elephants. It almost made me long for the flying pig. Meanwhile, the enemy army advanced down Fifth Avenue. We'd done our best to push cars out of the way to keep the mortals safe, but that just made it easier for our enemies to approach. The party ponies swished their tails nervously. Chiron galloped up and down their ranks, shouting encouragement to stand tough and think about victory and root beer, but I figured any second they would panic and run.
I'll take the dragon.
My voice came out as a timid squeak. Then I yelled louder.
I'll take the dragon. Everyone else, hold the line against the army.
Annabeth stood next to me. She had pulled her owl helmet low over her face, but I could tell her eyes were red.
Will you help me?
I asked. That's what I do, she said miserably. I help my friends.
I felt like a complete jerk. I wanted to pull her aside and explain that I didn't mean for Rachel to be here, that it wasn't my idea, but we had no time.
Go invisible, I said. Look for weak links in its armor while I keep it busy. Just be careful.
I whistled. Mrs. O'Leary, heal!
Roof!
My hellhound leaped over a line of centaurs and gave me a kiss that smelled suspiciously of pepperoni pizza. I drew my sword, and we charged the monster. The dragon was 3 stories above us, slithering sideways along the building as it sized up our forces. Wherever it looked, centaurs froze in fear. From the north, the enemy army crashed into the party ponies, and our lines broke. The dragon lashed out, swallowing 3 Californian centaurs in one gulp before I could even get close. Mrs. O'Leary launched herself through the air, a deadly black shadow with teeth and claws. Normally, a pouncing hellhound is a terrifying sight, but next to the dragon, Mrs. O'Leary looked like a child's night-night doll. Her claws raked harmlessly off the dragon's scales. She bit the monster's throat, but couldn't make a dent. Her weight, however, was enough to knock the dragon off the side of the building. It flailed awkwardly and crashed to the sidewalk, Hellhound and Serpent twisting and thrashing. The Draken tried to bite Mrs. O'Leary, but she was too close to the Serpent's mouth. Poison spewed everywhere, melting centaurs into dust, along with quite a few monsters. But Mrs. O'Leary weaved around the Serpent's head, scratching and biting. Yah! I plunged Riptide deep into the monster's left eye. The spotlight went dark. The Draken hissed and reared back to strike, but I rolled aside. It bit a swimming pool-sized chunk out of the pavement. It turned toward me with its good eye, and I focused on its teeth so I wouldn't get paralyzed. Mrs. O'Leary did her best to cause a distraction. She leaped onto the Serpent's head and scratched and growled like a really angry black wig. The rest of the battle wasn't going well. The centaurs had panicked under the onslaught of giants and demons. An occasional orange camp t-shirt appeared in the sea of fighting, but quickly disappeared. Arrows screamed. Fire exploded in waves across both armies. But the action was moving across the street to the entrance of the Empire State Building. We were losing ground. Suddenly, Annabeth materialized on the Draken's back. Her invisibility cap rolled off her head as she drove her bronze knife between a chink in the Serpent's scales. The Draken roared. It coiled around, knocking Annabeth off its back. I reached her just as she hit the ground. I dragged her out of the way as the Serpent rolled, crushing a lamppost right where she'd been. "Thanks," she said. "I told you to be careful." "Yeah, well, duck!" It was her turn to save me. She tackled me as the monster's teeth snapped above my head. Mrs. O'Leary body-slammed the Draken's face to get its attention, and we rolled out of the way. Meanwhile, our allies had retreated to the doors of the Empire State Building. The entire enemy army was surrounding them. We were out of options. No more help was coming. Annabeth and I would have to retreat before we were cut off from Mount Olympus. Then I heard a rumbling in the south. It wasn't a sound you hear much in New York, but I recognized it immediately. Chariot wheels. A girl's voice yelled, "Ares!" And a dozen war chariots charged into battle. Each flew a red banner with the symbol of the wild boar's head. Each was pulled by a team of skeletal horses with manes of fire. A total of 30 fresh warriors, armor gleaming and eyes full of hate, lowered their lances as one, making a bristling wall of death. "The children of Ares," Annabeth said in amazement. "How did Rachel know?" I didn't have an answer, but leading the charge was a girl in familiar red armor, her face covered by a boar's head helm. She held aloft a spear that crackled with electricity. Clarice herself had come to the rescue. While half her chariots charged the monster army, Clarice led the other six straight for the Draken. The Serpent reared back and managed to throw off Mrs. O'Leary. My poor pet hit the side of the building with a yelp. I ran to help her, but the Serpent had already zeroed in on the new threat. Even with only one eye, its glare was enough to paralyze two chariot drivers. They veered into a line of cars. The other four chariots kept charging. The monster bared its fangs to strike and got a mouthful of celestial bronze javelins. "Eeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeee
Ares to me!
Clarice screamed. Her voice sounded shriller than usual, but I guess that wasn't surprising, given what she was fighting. Across the street, the arrival of 6 chariots gave the party ponies new hope. They rallied at the doors of the Empire State Building, and the enemy army was momentarily thrown into confusion. Meanwhile, Clarice's chariots circled the dragon. Lances broke against the monster's skin. Skeletal horses breathed fire and whinnied. 2 more chariots overturned, but the warriors simply leaped to their feet, drew their swords, and went to work. They hacked at chinks in the creature's scales. They dodged poison spray like they'd been training for this all their lives, which of course they had. No one could say the Ares campers weren't brave. Clarice was right there in front, stabbing her spear at the dragon's face, trying to put out its other eye. But as I watched, things started to go wrong. The dragon snapped up one Ares camper in a gulp. It knocked aside another and sprayed poison on a third, who retreated in a panic, his armor melting.
"We have to help,"
Annabeth said. She was right. I'd just been standing there frozen in amazement. Mrs. O'Leary tried to get up, but yelped again. One of her paws was bleeding.
"Stay back, girl," I told her. "You've done enough already."
Annabeth and I jumped onto the monster's back and ran toward its head, trying to draw its attention away from Clarice. Her cabinmates threw javelins, most of which broke, but some lodged in the monster's teeth. It snapped its jaws together until its mouth was a mess of green blood, yellow foamy poison, and splintered weapons.
"You can do it," I yelled at Clarice. "A child of Ares is destined to kill it."
Through her war helmet, I could only see her eyes, but I could tell something was wrong. Her blue eyes shone with fear. Clarice never looked like that, and she didn't have blue eyes.
"Ares!"
she shouted in that strangely shrill voice. She leveled her spear and charged the dragon.
"No,"
I muttered.
"Wait!"
But the monster looked down at her, almost in contempt, and spit poison directly in her face. She screamed and fell.
"Clarice!"
Annabeth jumped off the monster's back and ran to help, while the other Ares campers tried to defend their fallen counselor. I drove Riptide between two of the creature's scales and managed to turn its attention on me. I got thrown, but I landed on my feet.
"Come on, you stupid worm! Look at me!"
For the next several minutes, all I saw were teeth. I retreated and dodged poison, but I couldn't hurt the thing. At the edge of my vision, I saw a flying chariot land on Fifth Avenue. Then someone ran toward us. A girl's voice, shaken with grief, cried,
"No! Curse you! Why?"
I dared to glance over, but what I saw made no sense. Clarice was lying on the ground where she'd fallen, her armor smoked with poison. Annabeth and the Ares campers were trying to unfasten her helmet, and kneeling next to them, her face blotchy with tears, was a girl in camp clothes. It was Clarice. My head spun. Why hadn't I noticed before? The girl in Clarice's armor was much thinner, not as tall. But why would someone pretend to be Clarice? I was so stunned, the dragon almost snapped me in half. I dodged, and the beast buried its head in a brick wall.
"Why?"
the real Clarice demanded, holding the other girl in her arms while the campers struggled to remove the poison-corroded helmet. Chris Rodriguez ran over from the flying chariot. He and Clarice must have ridden it here from camp, chasing the Ares campers, who'd mistakenly been following the other girl, thinking she was Clarice, but it still made no sense. The dragon tugged its head from the brick wall and screamed in rage.
"Look out!"
Chris warned. Instead of turning toward me, the dragon whirled toward the sound of Chris's voice. It bared its fangs at the group of demigods. The real Clarice looked up at the dragon, her face filled with absolute hate. I'd seen her look that intense only once before. Her father, Ares, had worn the same expression when I'd fought him in single combat.
"You want death?"
Clarice screamed at the dragon.
"Well, come on!"
She grabbed her spear from the fallen girl. With no armor or shield, she charged the dragon. I tried to close the distance to help, but Clarice was faster. She leaped aside as the monster struck, pulverizing the ground in front of her. Then she jumped onto the creature's head. As it reared up, she drove her electric spear into its good eye with so much force it shattered the shaft, releasing all of the magic weapon's power. Electricity arced across the creature's head, causing its whole body to shudder. Clarice jumped free, rolling safely to the sidewalk as smoke boiled from the dragon's mouth. The dragon's flesh dissolved, and it collapsed into a hollow, scaly tunnel of armor. The rest of us stared at Clarice in awe. I had never seen anyone take down such a huge monster single-handedly. But Clarice didn't seem to care. She ran back to the wounded girl who'd stolen her armor. Finally, Annabeth managed to remove the girl's helmet. We all gathered around, the Ares campers, Chris, Clarice, Annabeth, and me. The battle still raged along Fifth Avenue, but for that moment, nothing existed except our small circle and the fallen girl. Her features, once beautiful, were badly burned from poison. I could tell that no amount of nectar or ambrosia would save her. Something is about to happen. Rachel's words rang in my ears. A trick that ends in death. Now I knew what she meant, and I knew who had led the Ares cabin into battle. I looked down at the dying face of Selena Beauregard.
Chapter 17. I sit on the hot seat.
What were you thinking?
Clarice cradled Selena's head in her lap. Selena tried to swallow, but her lips were dry and cracked.
Wouldn't listen. Cabin would only follow you.
So you stole my armor? Clarice said in disbelief.
You waited until Chris and I went out on patrol. You stole my armor and pretended to be me.
She glared at her siblings.
And none of you noticed?
The Ares campers developed a sudden interest in their combat boots.
Don't blame them, Selena said. They wanted to believe I was you. You stupid Aphrodite girl,
Clarice sobbed.
You charged a dragon? Why? All my fault, Selena said, a tear streaking down the side of her face. The dragon, Charlie's death, camp endangered. Stop it, Clarice said. That's not true.
Selena opened her hand. In her palm was a silver bracelet with a scythe charm, the mark of Kronos. A cold fist closed around my heart. You were the spy. Selena tried to nod.
Before I liked Charlie, Luke was nice to me. He was so charming, handsome. Later, I wanted to stop helping him, but he threatened to tell. He promised I was saving lives. Fewer people would get hurt. He told me he wouldn't hurt Charlie. He lied to me.
I met Annabeth's eyes. Her face was chalky. She looked like somebody had just yanked the world out from under her feet. Behind us, the battle raged. Clarice scowled at her cabin mates.
Go! Help the centaurs! Protect the doors! Go!
They scrambled off to join the fight. Selena took a heavy, painful breath.
Forgive me.
You're not dying, Clarice insisted.
Charlie.
Selena's eyes were a million miles away.
See, Charlie?
She didn't speak again. Clarice held her and wept. Chris put a hand on her shoulder. Finally, Annabeth closed Selena's eyes.
We have to fight.
Annabeth's voice was brittle.
She gave her life to help us. We have to honor her.
Clarice sniffled and wiped her nose.
She was a hero. Understand? A hero.
I nodded. Come on, Clarice. She picked up a sword from one of her fallen siblings.
Kronos is going to pay.
I'd like to say I drove the enemy away from the Empire State Building. The truth was, Clarice did all the work. Even without her armor or spear, she was a demon. She rode her chariot straight into the Titan's army and crushed everything in her path. She was so inspiring, even the panicked centaurs started to rally.
the hunters scrounged arrows from the fallen and launched volley after volley into the enemy. The Ares cabin slashed and hacked, which was their favorite thing. The monsters retreated toward 35th Street. Clarice drove to the dragon's carcass and looped a grappling line through its eye sockets. She lashed her horses and took off, dragging the dragon behind the chariot like a Chinese New Year dragon. She charged after the enemy, yelling insults and daring them to cross her. As she rode, I realized she was literally glowing. An aura of red fire flickered around her. "The blessing of Ares," Thalia said. "I've never seen it in person before." For the moment, Clarice was as invincible as I was. The enemy threw spears and arrows, but nothing hit her.
"I am Clarice, Dragon Slayer," she yelled. "I will kill you all! Where is Kronos? Bring him out! Is he a coward?"
"Clarice," I yelled.
"Stop it! Withdraw!"
"What's the matter, Titan Lord?" she yelled.
"Bring it on!"
There was no answer from the enemy. Slowly, they began to fall back behind a Dracene shield wall, while Clarice drove in circles around Fifth Avenue, daring anyone to cross her path. The 200-foot-long dragon carcass made a hollow scraping noise against the pavement, like 1,000 knives. Meanwhile, we tended our wounded, bringing them inside the lobby. Long after the enemy had retreated from sight, Clarice kept riding up and down the avenue with her horrible trophy, demanding that Kronos meet her battle. Chris said,
"I'll watch her. She'll get tired eventually. I'll make sure she comes inside."
"What about the camp?" I asked. "Is anybody left there?"
Chris shook his head. "Only Argus and the nature spirits. Peleus the dragon is still guarding the tree."
"They won't last long," I said, "but I'm glad you came." Chris nodded sadly.
"I'm sorry it took so long. I tried to reason with Clarice. I said there's no point in defending camp if you guys die. All our friends are here. I'm sorry it took Selena."
"My hunters will help you stand guard," Thalia said. "Annabeth and Percy, you should go to Olympus. I have a feeling they'll need you up there to set up the final defense." The doorman had disappeared from the lobby. His book was face down on the desk and his chair was empty. The rest of the lobby, however, was jam-packed with wounded campers, hunters, and satyrs. Connor and Travis Stoll met us by the elevators.
"Is it true?" Connor asked. "About Selena?"
I nodded. "She died a hero." Travis shifted uncomfortably.
"I also heard..."
"That's it," I insisted. "End of story."
"Right," Travis mumbled. "Listen, we figure the Titan's army will have trouble getting up the elevator. They'll have to go up a few at a time, and the giants won't be able to fit it all."
"That's our biggest advantage," I said. "Any way to disable the elevator?"
"It's magic," Travis said.
"Usually you need a key card, but the doorman vanished. That means the defenses are crumbling. Anyone could walk into the elevator now and head straight up."
"Then we have to keep them away from the doors," I said. "We'll bottle them up in the lobby."
"We need reinforcements," Travis said. "They'll just keep coming. Eventually they'll overwhelm us."
"There are no reinforcements," Connor complained.
I looked outside at Mrs. O'Leary, who was breathing against the glass doors and smearing them with hellhound drool. "Maybe that's not true," I said. I went outside and put a hand on Mrs. O'Leary's muzzle. Kyron had bandaged her paw, but she was still limping. Her fur was matted with mud, leaves, pizza slices, and dried monster blood. "Hey, girl," I tried to sound upbeat. "I know you're tired, but I've got one more big favor to ask you." I leaned next to her and whispered in her ear. After Mrs. O'Leary's shadow traveled away, I rejoined Annabeth in the lobby. On the way to the elevator, we spotted Grover kneeling over a fat, wounded satyr. "Linnaeus," I said. The old satyr looked terrible. His lips were blue. There was a broken spear in his belly, and his furry goat legs were twisted at a painful angle. He tried to focus on us, but I don't think he saw us.
Grover,
he murmured.
I'm here, Linnaeus.
Grover was blinking back tears, despite all the horrible things Linnaeus had said about him.
Did we win?
Yes, Grover lied. Thanks to you, Linnaeus, we drove the enemy away.
Told you,
the old satyr mumbled.
True leader, true.
He closed his eyes for the last time. Grover gulped. He put his hand on Linnaeus's forehead and spoke an ancient blessing. The old satyr's body melted, until all that was left was a tiny sapling in a pile of fresh soil.
A laurel,
Grover said in awe.
Oh, that lucky old goat.
He gathered up the sapling in his hands.
I should plant them, in Olympus, in the gardens.
We're going that way, I said. Come on. Easy listening music played as the elevator rose. I thought about the first time I'd visited Mount Olympus, back when I was 12. Annabeth and Grover hadn't been with me then. I was glad they were with me now. I had a feeling it might be our last adventure together.
Percy, Annabeth said quietly, you were right about Luke.
It was the first time she'd spoken since Selena Beauregard's death. She kept her eyes fixed on the elevator floors as they blinked into the magical numbers 400, 450, 500. Grover and I exchanged glances. Annabeth, I said, I'm sorry.
You tried to tell me.
Her voice was shaky.
Luke is no good. I didn't believe you until I heard how he'd used Selena. Now I know. I hope you're happy.
That doesn't make me happy. She put her head against the elevator wall and wouldn't look at me. Grover cradled his laurel sapling in his hands.
Well, sure good to be together again. Arguing, almost dying, abject terror. Oh, look, it's our floor.
The doors dinged, and we stepped onto the aerial walkway. Depressing is not a word that usually describes Mount Olympus, but it looked that way now. No fires lit the braziers. The windows were dark. The streets were deserted, and the doors were barred. The only movement was in the parks, which had been set up as field hospitals. Will Solis and the other Apollo campers scrambled around, caring for the wounded. Naiads and dryads tried to help, using nature magic songs to heal burns and poison. As Grover planted the laurel sapling, Annabeth and I went around to cheer up the wounded. I passed a satyr with a broken leg, a demigod who was bandaged from head to toe, and a body covered in the golden burial shroud of Apollo's cabin. I didn't know who was underneath. I didn't want to find out. My heart felt like lead, but we tried to find positive things to say.
You'll be up and fighting Titans in no time,
I told one camper.
You look great, Annabeth told one camper.
Linnaeus turned into a shrub, Grover told a groaning satyr.
I found Dionysus' son, Pollux, propped up against a tree. He had a broken arm, but otherwise he was okay.
I can still fight with the other hand, he said, gritting his teeth.
No, I said. You've done enough. I want you to stay here and help with the wounded.
But...
Promise me to stay safe, I said. Okay? Personal favor. He frowned uncertainly. It wasn't like we were good friends or anything, but I wasn't going to tell him it was a request from his dad. That would just embarrass him. Finally, he promised, and when he sat back down, I could tell he was kind of relieved. Annabeth, Grover, and I kept walking toward the palace. That's where Kronos would head.
As soon as he made it up the elevator, and I had no doubt he would, one way or another, he would destroy the throne room, the center of the god's power. The bronze doors creaked open. Our footsteps echoed on the marble floor. The constellations twinkled coldly on the ceiling of the great hall. The hearth was down to a dull red glow. Hestia, in the form of a little girl in brown robes, hunched at its edge, shivering. The Ophiotaurus swam sadly in a sphere of water. He let out a half-hearted moo when he saw me. In the firelight, the thrones cast evil-looking shadows like grasping hands. Standing at the foot of Zeus's throne, looking up at the stars, was Rachel Elizabeth Dare. She was holding a Greek ceramic vase. "Rachel?" I said. What are you doing with that?" She focused on me as if she were coming out of a dream. "I found it. It's Pandora's jar, isn't it?" Her eyes were brighter than usual, and I had a bad flashback of moldy sandwiches and burned cookies. "Please, put down the jar," I said. "I can see hope inside it." Rachel ran her fingers over the ceramic designs. "So fragile." "Rachel?" My voice seemed to bring her back to reality. She held out the jar, and I took it. The clay felt as cold as ice. "Grover?" Annabeth mumbled. "Let's scout around the palace. Maybe we can find some extra Greek fire or Hephaestus traps."
"But..."
Annabeth elbowed him.
"Right," he yelped. "I love traps."
She dragged him out of the throne room. Over by the fire, Hestia was huddled in her robes, rocking back and forth. "Come on," I told Rachel. "I want you to meet someone." We sat next to the goddess.
"Lady Hestia," I said.
"Hello, Percy Jackson," the goddess murmured. "Getting colder, harder to keep the fire going."
"I know," I said. "The Titans are near." Hestia focused on Rachel.
"Hello, my dear. You've come to our hearth at last."
Rachel blinked.
"You've been expecting me?"
Hestia held out her hands, and the coals glowed. I saw images in the fire. My mother, Paul and I eating Thanksgiving dinner at the kitchen table. My friends and me around the campfire at Camp Half-Blood, singing songs and roasting marshmallows. Rachel and me driving along the beach in Paul's Prius. I didn't know if Rachel saw the same images, but the tension went out of her shoulders. The warmth of the fire seemed to spread across her.
"To claim your place at the hearth," Hestia told her, "you must let go of your distractions. It is the only way you will survive."
Rachel nodded.
I understand."
"Wait," I said. "What is she talking about?" Rachel took a shaky breath.
"Percy, when I came here, I thought I was coming for you, but I wasn't. You and me..."
She shook her head. "Wait. Now I'm a distraction? Is this because I'm not the hero or whatever?"
"I'm not sure I can put it into words," she said. "I was drawn to you because you opened the door to all of this."
She gestured at the throne room.
"I needed to understand my true sight, but you and me, that wasn't part of it. Our fates aren't intertwined. I think you've always known that, deep down."
I stared at her. Maybe I wasn't the brightest guy in the world when it came to girls, but I was pretty sure Rachel had just dumped me, which was lame considering we'd never even been together.
"So what?" I said. "Thanks for bringing me to Olympus. See ya. Is that what you're saying?"
Rachel stared at the fire.
"Percy Jackson," Hestia said. "Rachel has told you all she can. Her moment is coming, but your decision approaches even more rapidly. Are you prepared?"
I wanted to complain that no, I wasn't even close to prepared. I looked at Pandora's jar, and for the first time, I had an urge to open it. Hope seemed pretty useless to me right now. So many of my friends were dead, Rachel was cutting me off, Annabeth was angry with me, my parents were asleep down in the street somewhere while a monster army surrounded the building. Olympus was on the verge of falling, and I'd seen so many cruel things that the gods had done, Zeus destroying Maria de Angelo, Hades cursing the last oracle, Hermes turning his back on Luke, even when he knew his son would become evil.
Surrender,
Prometheus's voice whispered in my ear.
Otherwise, your home will be destroyed. Your precious camp will burn.
Then I looked at Hestia. Her red eyes glowed warmly. I remembered the images I'd seen in her hearth. Friends and family, everyone I cared about. I remembered something Chris Rodriguez had said.
There's no point in defending camp if you guys die. All our friends are here.
And Nico, standing up to his father Hades.
If Olympus falls, he said, your own palace's safety doesn't matter.
I heard footsteps. Annabeth and Grover came back into the throne room and stopped when they saw us. I probably had a pretty strange look on my face.
Percy?
Annabeth didn't sound angry anymore, just concerned. Should we, leave again? Suddenly, I felt like someone had injected me with steel. I understood what to do. I looked at Rachel.
You're not going to do anything stupid, are you? I mean, you talked to Chiron, right?
She managed a faint smile.
You're worried about me doing something stupid?
But, I mean, will you be okay?
I don't know, she admitted. That kind of depends on whether you save the world, hero.
I picked up Pandora's jar. The spirit of hope fluttered inside, trying to warm the cold container. Hestia, I said, I give this to you as an offering.
The goddess tilted her head. I am the least of the gods. Why would you trust me with this?
You're the last Olympian, I said, and the most important.
And why is that, Percy Jackson?
Because hope survives best at the hearth, I said. Guard it for me, and I won't be tempted to give up again.
The goddess smiled. She took the jar in her hands, and it began to glow. The hearth fire burned a little brighter. Well done, Percy Jackson, she said. May the gods bless you.
We're about to find out. I looked at Annabeth and Grover. Come on, guys. I marched toward my father's throne. The seat of Poseidon stood just to the right of Zeus's, but it wasn't nearly as grand. The molded black leather seat was attached to a swivel pedestal, with a couple of iron rings on the side for fastening a fishing pole, or a trident. Basically, it looked like a chair on a deep sea boat that you would sit in if you wanted to hunt shark or marlin or sea monsters. Gods in their natural state are about 20 feet tall, so I could just reach the edge of the seat if I stretched my arms.
Help me up, I told Annabeth and Grover. Are you crazy?
Annabeth asked.
Probably,
I admitted.
Percy, Grover said. The gods really don't appreciate people sitting in their thrones. I mean, like, turn you into a pile of ashes don't appreciate it.
I need to get his attention, I said. It's the only way. They exchanged uneasy looks.
Well, Annabeth said, this'll get his attention.
They linked their arms to make a step, then boosted me onto the throne. I felt like a baby with my feet so high off the ground. I looked around at the other gloomy, empty thrones, and I could imagine what it would be like sitting on the Olympian Council. So much power, but so much arguing. Always 11 other gods trying to get their way. It would be easy to get paranoid, to look out only for my own interest, especially if I were Poseidon. Sitting on his throne, I felt like I had the entire sea at my command. Vast cubic miles of ocean churning with power and mystery. Why should Poseidon listen to anyone? Why shouldn't he be the greatest of the 12? Then I shook my head. Concentrate. The throne rumbled. A wave of gale force anger slammed into my mind.
Who dares?
The voice stopped abruptly. The anger retreated, which was a good thing, because just those two words had almost blasted my mind to shreds.
Percy?
My father's voice was still angry but more controlled.
What exactly are you doing on my throne?
I'm sorry, Father, I said. I needed to get your attention.
This was a very dangerous thing to do, even for you. If I hadn't looked before I blasted, you would now be a puddle of seawater.
I'm sorry, I said again. Listen, things are rough up here. I told him what was happening. Then I told him my plan. His voice was silent for a long time.
Percy, what you ask is impossible. My palace.
Dad, Chrono sent an army against you on purpose. He wants to divide you from the other gods because he knows you could tip the scales.
Be that as it may, he attacks my home.
I'm at your home, I said. Olympus. The floor shook. A wave of anger washed over my mind. I thought I'd gone too far, but then the trembling eased. In the background of my mental link, I heard underwater explosions and the sound of battle cries. Cyclopes bellowing, mermen shouting. Is Tyson okay? I asked. The question seemed to take my dad by surprise.
He's fine. Doing much better than I expected, though peanut butter is a strange battle cry.
You let him fight?
Stop changing the subject. You realize what you're asking me to do? My palace will be destroyed.
And Olympus might be saved.
Do you have any idea how long I've worked on remodeling this palace? The game room alone took 600 years.
Dad.
Very well. It shall be as you say. But my son, pray this works.
I am praying. I'm talking to you, right?
Oh, yes. Good point. Amphitrite, incoming!
The sound of a large explosion shattered our connection. I slipped down from the throne. Grover studied me nervously.
Are you okay? You turned pale and you started smoking.
I did not. Then I looked at my arms. Steam was curling off my shirt sleeves. The hair on my arms was singed.
If you'd sat there any longer, Annabeth said, you would have spontaneously combusted. I hope the conversation was worth it.
Moo,
said the Ophiotaurus in his sphere of water. We'll find out soon, I said. Just then, the doors of the throne room swung open. Thalia marched in. Her bow was snapped in half, and her quiver was empty.
You've got to get down there, she told us. The enemy is advancing, and Kronos is leading them.
Chapter 18. My parents go commando. By the time we got to the street, it was too late. Campers and hunters lay wounded on the ground. Clarice must have lost a fight with a Hyperborean giant, because she and her chariot were frozen in a block of ice. The centaurs were nowhere to be seen. Either they'd panicked and ran, or they'd been disintegrated. The Titan army ringed the building, standing maybe 20 feet from the doors. Kronos' vanguard was in the lead. Ethan Nakamura, the Dracaena Queen in her green armor, and two Hyperboreans. I didn't see Prometheus. The slimy weasel was probably hiding back at their headquarters, but Kronos himself stood right in front with his scythe in hand. The only thing standing in his way was... Chiron? Annabeth said, her voice trembling. If Chiron heard us, he didn't answer. He had an arrow notched, aimed straight at Kronos' face.
As soon as Kronos saw me, his gold eyes flared. Every muscle in my body froze. Then the Titan Lord turned his attention back to Chiron.
"Step aside, little son."
Hearing Luke call Chiron his son was weird enough. But Kronos put contempt in his voice, like son was